Welcome to NHL Draft Class. I am Adam Kimmelman here, as always, with Mike Morial. And Mike, the time is upon us. It is draft week. It is our week. Personally, we love this week. We'll be heading up to Buffalo in a couple of days. It is 51 weeks of work has led us to this week. Are you ready, sir?
You know what this week means, Adam. You know what this week means. It means a lot of coffee. A lot of coffee, buddy. Even our producer, Phil Constantino, has a cup as we're recording this. Unbelievable. Adam, we're closing fast. The excitement is ramping up. And we're going to have a great guest today, Jason Buchla of Sportsnet, to break it down with us on this episode as we preview the 2026 NHL draft. Obviously, you know, Book's NHL scout, started his career with the Predators, later served as the director of amateur scouting for the Florida Panthers, does great work along with Sam Constantino on Sportsnet. So I'm looking forward, Adam, to asking Jason about the McKenna versus Stenberg debate. He seems to be leaning a little Stenberg, so I'm going to be curious why. How about you?
Absolutely. You know, we've all been back and forth. Obviously, our most recent mock drafts, we both have Gavin McKenna going number one. We'll have another mock draft coming out on Wednesday, June 24th, so you'll be able to see again how we feel. But my opinion hasn't changed. I'm guessing yours is kind of the same. It's McKenna.
Yes. Yeah, we're going McKenna. Look, it's a different situation here, and right, you got two left wings. It's usually the draft is kind of built on defense and centers, but two left wings here that are kind of in the debate in McKenna and Stenberg. So we remember it, Adam. You know, Taylor versus Tyler back in 2010, Nico versus Nolan back in 2017, and this year it looks like it's McKenna versus Stenberg. Yeah, I mean, for my mock draft, we're going to run that final one in a couple days. So it's, for me, it's going to be McKenna, but let's see what Jason Buchla has to say.
Yes. Let's go to Mr. Buchla, who runs also the pro hockey group, as well as appearing on Sportsnet and NHL Network and anywhere you enjoy your prospect talk. Jason, thank you for taking time out of your very busy week to join us here on NHL Draft Class.
It's an exciting week. Nice to be with you guys, as always. And yeah, it's off to a flying start already with the trades that have already occurred ahead of the draft itself. And then, of course, the draft capital. It's going to be interesting on Friday night to see how much more movement occurs with these teams that have multiple picks in the first round. And we'll see how the strategy rolls out.
So good to see and hear you again, Books. But let's get right at it at the top. Gavin McKenna and Ivar Stenberg. McKenna showed a lot of attention to detail over the second half at Penn State, Books, and produced something that isn't a short sample size because, you know, it's kind of what he's done for most of his career against older competition. Stenberg has that look of a pro-ready 200-foot winger right now. So there's a real case for him at number one. Based on what I've read and seen, Books, I think you lean Stenberg with that awareness he possesses. But how close is this comparison, and who do you think the Maple Leafs, if they keep that number one, will ultimately choose?
Well, let me start by saying I don't see the Maple Leafs trading away the top pick in this draft. I think that John Chajka and Matt Sundin are exceptionally excited about the opportunity that they've been presented here, the luck, the stroke of luck, to be honest with you. And I don't think that that's going to be moved. Now, having said that, there's a 1A and a 1A at the top of this draft class. For me, it's really just a stylistic pick the style of player that you value the most to build around with your forward group. And I guess what's unique about it, guys, is that we're talking about wingers instead of centermen or even right shot defensemen. Now, listen, there are some centermen and there are some right shot defensemen, but the cutoff for me is the top two guys, Stenberg and McKenna, and then the rest. Like, there's another tier below that. So I'm leaning Stenberg. When the three of us were together in Minneapolis over the holiday season at the World Juniors, we saw just how elite him and Stenberg and you know, Viggo Bjork, even, guys, remember how great he was there. But certainly Stenberg, he rose to the top of my draft ranking in January after the World Junior. And he honestly didn't do anything to fall off the perch. It's just as simple as that. Is as well as McKenna played in the back half of the season, because boy, oh boy, did he ever come on. I would say that his defensive play, his overall detail improved at least by 30%. Some would argue maybe more than that. And his offense continued to rise. Like it flourished in relation to the first half of the season. He added detail in the second half, and his scoring even went to another level, which tells you something, right? If you play the game the right way, you're still going to get those chances to score, and he's an elite offensive talent. McKenna's a quick strike guy. Stenberg's more like a death by a thousand cuts, if you will. And it's just a matter of what you value and what you have to surround them with.
Yeah, I guess this argument would be a little bit easier if one of them was a center, because then it would probably be a little bit more clear cut. But let's shift to the defenseman for a minute. Five top guys have seemed to sort of separate themselves from the group. You've got Chase Reeds, you've got Carson Carroll's, Daxon Rudolph, Albert Smits, Keaton Verhoef. General manager Jason Bukala, you can take one of them. Who do you take first? And actually, let's do this. Let's have some fun. Give me your one through five. How do you kind of stack up the five guys?
Yeah, fair enough. I think it is actually important, all joking aside, to rank it one through five. And why? Because you don't know how the draft order is going to fall. And two, strategically, if you want to be on the, or if you have a strategy on the floor to potentially trade back because you have three or four bodies that you really value, then you know, this is an exercise that you go through in the war room, if you will. I have Keaton Verhoef number one. Keaton Verhoef took it upon himself as a 17-year-old to go to North Dakota and challenge himself, I would say, to become more of a complete player. Certainly more defensively, he was challenged. And the reason is simple, guys. When you're in the Western Hockey League, and we already knew coming into this season what he could do offensively. He had 21 goals a year before in the Western Hockey League. I would argue that he would have had north of 30 if he would have stayed back. He goes to North Dakota. His offensive metrics are still really solid. As a matter of fact, he's the third highest draft eligible scoring defenseman leading into a draft in the history of the NCAA. Pretty good. But really where the challenge lies, as you guys know, you watch enough college hockey, as do I, it's just that defending against, never mind the top six, even guys in the three hole, the four hole, these are older, stronger, faster athletes, and it's just harder to do it. So I put him in that slot just because I believe, all things being equal, He would have been at least the equal of Chase Reed. I'm saying he would have gone right past him in terms of offense if he would have hung back in the Western Hockey League. 6'5", 215, or 6'4", 215. He reminds me a lot of his attributes of Aaron Ekblad when we drafted him in Florida back in the day. They're very, very close when I watch the two of them play. So he's number one for me, Kimmer. But after that, you get into, you know, pick your poison. It's Chase Reed. What a great story. I mean, anytime you can get a prospect who's had to persevere already, prospects have to tell you something. They tell you most days are going to tell you something good, right? That's why they're so high in this draft class. But there's also going to be the days that they need a B game, or you need to know that they can persevere through some distractions. And Chase Reed 2 years ago couldn't get in the lineup for Waterloo in the USHL. And then, of course, he goes to Bismarck in the North American League and works his way to the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. And the rest is kind of history so far. Super, super athlete, 6'2½", 190. Agile, can run the power play. What I really liked about him in the second half of the year, he bodied up more than he did in the first half, so he killed plays in the neutral zone. And what does that mean? You kill a play before a zone entry defensively. Now you turn up ice with a quick hitter, whether you outlet and join as an extra layer or you just lead the rush yourself. His feet are outstanding. So he's the second guy. Carson Carls, great interview. Everybody knows the character of this kid. He's a farm kid that isn't coming to the draft. He's got chores, if you will, on the farm. They have a cattle farm there, and they're going through a process right now that everybody needs. It's all hands on deck on the farm, and it doesn't surprise me in the least that he's staying back. Here's a kid again. He's a left shot version of Chase Reed in a lot of ways. Like, he's super agile, tons of bite defensively. Probably more bite, actually, now that I say that, than Reed and Verhoef from below the goal line and below the hash marks in his zone. He's got more grizzle to him that way. But again, two-way defenseman, he can run a power play. Albert Smits, Daxon Rudolph, splitting hairs. I've got Rudolph at eight, similar to what you said about the centerman. Rudolph's the right shot, Smits is the left shot. I value the right shot more than the left shot. I've got Daxon Rudolph right now at eight. Anytime you can get a defenseman, a right shot D who scores north of 30 goals, he's about a plus 60 something on the year. And by the way, over 100 penalty minutes, I'll take those guys all day long, because they're going to do more than just score and move pucks, aren't they? They're going to push back physically. And you know how hard the game is, guys, come playoff time. Albert Smits, what a great story. Moved away from home from Latvia when he was 13 years old, which is absolutely crazy. I don't think the three of us could ever envision our children moving away at 13. I know I couldn't even move away at 13 back in the day, so that's not going to be part of the equation. But anyways, chasing his dream, from Latvia, moves to Finland with a buddy of his, another hockey player who's since gone back and isn't in hockey as I understand it anymore. But he just kept going, right? And nobody played more hockey than Albert Smits this year, guys. Think about it, like a Liiga in Finland, U20 in Finland, World Junior representing Latvia, gets loaned out to in Germany, goes to play in the Dell, and then he, by the way, plays for in the Olympics, and then he plays in the World Championship for Latvia. That's an incredible story. Two-way left shot guy. Not so sure that he's going to produce the offense that the people ahead of him on my list project to do. He could. It's not that he's not agile. He's just not as spatial. So when he takes it on the strong side, he'll walk to the middle, but he's not going to be like a low high cycle kind of wandering around making plays. He's going to be more from distance. And again, 6'3", 210 pounds. He can kill plays with his length and his size. So to review it, the order: Keaton Verhof, Chase Reed, Carson Carls, Daxton Rudolph, Albert Smits.
I like that. I like that. I actually have Reeder at the top of my list. I have Carl's number two, Verhof three. But I mean, the order can switch, and you see that with all the pundits out there, Jace. It fluctuates, and who knows where that first defenseman's going to fall. I think that's the intriguing thing about this draft too, is where that first domino will fall. And we all expect these guys to go in that top 10 range. So it's going to be really interesting. So, not getting off the defenseman topic here, not one defenseman under 6 foot was chosen at the 25 draft. There looks to be three potential candidates going in the first round this year: Ryan Lynn, Tommy Blyle, Xavier Villeneuve. Of those three, what's your pecking order, and what does your top choice have over the others?
So Ryan Lynn's at the top of that there. He's 12th on my list, so he's not really far out of reach from Smits. I've got a couple of forwards in between, but so Ryan Lynn, 5'11 and a quarter, buck 80. His first year at the major junior level in Vancouver a year ago, well now 2 years ago, transitional element was clear. So he was a one man breakout. He could track a puck, break it out himself with his legs. And then, enter the offensive zone, and things were going to happen from there. A year ago in his rookie year, more of a distributor than a shooter. And it wasn't that he didn't walk to get open or to kind of open up space and open up shooting or passing lanes. He just deferred. So he would pass the puck more than get it to the net. This year, his goal production more than doubled, and he was more aggressive getting pucks to the net. So that's one thing that stood out for me, Mike. The other thing that really stood out for me at the end of the year in Slovakia at the U18s was the fact that his physicality, and I don't need this guy to be overly punishing, but you got to let your opponent know that you're engaged, right? Or else you're just going to get run over by bigger, stronger forwards on the opponents. And he killed plays more aggressively, defensively in Slovakia than he did all year long. So I'm not even just talking about along the wall from the hash marks and down to his net crease area. I'm talking about open ice. He was gapping up even in on the offensive blue line. He'd see a breakout, like a middle lane breakout pass, and he was dumping opponents on the rear end. I really like that about him, his read, react, and the engagement. So that's why he ended up kind of climbing up a little bit for me at the end of the year. Two-way transitional guy, power play quarterback, at worst second unit power play. Fantastic feet, legs. As everybody sees in the NHL today, you got to get to a puck ahead of your opponent and get it up ice as quickly as possible. And then what do you do after that? Well, the defensemen, who are really good skaters nowadays, they have the green light to join as an extra layer, an offenseman, if you will. And most teams attack with four people. So that's why Ryan Lynn was there. Further on down, again, splitting hairs between the Villeneuve from Blainville in the Quebec League and Tommy Blyle from Moncton in the Quebec League. Villeneuve was on my radar coming into the season, and even last year when he was at the World Championship in Dallas as an underage. Blyle came on the he kind of burst onto the scene, coming through the prep school ranks in the United States and coming up to Moncton. And Moncton runs their program like a pro team. They're very well coached with Gardner McDougal and the facilities and everything. He took right off. But Body of work over a longer period of time favors Villeneuve for me, although Blyle's offensive metrics were higher. Both of these guys, right shot, left shot, almost identical in size. Villeneuve has even got a bigger personality than Blyle. He's full of you-know-what and vinegar, this kid. He really pushes back, and he really wants to be a difference maker, to the point that I actually think you're going to have to dial him back a little bit, which I like. That sounds kind of crazy, but you'd rather have to dial back a prospect then pump him up, because you either have it or you don't, and there's going to be a lot of hard days. So Villeneuve, he defends with purpose. Lane Hutson, the Hutson crew, they all defend with purpose. So does Villeneuve. I would say this though, Tommy Blyle, both these guys, Villeneuve and Blyle, are quarterbacks on the power play. Blyle with the right shot, I would say that on straight lines, Villeneuve's got an awkward kind of skating stride. He gets everywhere in on time. He's quick, he's fast. But Blyle is more smooth in transition. He looks like he's almost not moving sometimes. So I would give the edge to him there in open ice. But yeah, three undersized guys all can run a power play. The edge goes to Lynn because I think he's physically more engaged.
All right, so I want to go back to Albert Smits for a minute. We asked him at the draft or at the combine, what separates you from this group of five? And he's like, I'm the only one who's worked out and skated and played against men all season long. So, I want to go back to you and your scouting days with Florida and Nashville. Like, you're looking, you're guessing. Scouting is guessing, projecting where are these guys going to be when they get to the NHL. I think with Smits, it almost feels like you have proof of concept because of what he did at the Worlds, because of what he did at the Olympics, certainly. Is he, in your mind, maybe the most NHL-ready prospect just because of where he's played and what he's done this season? And then you mentioned the maturity aspect, leaving home at 13 to go live in Finland. He told me, oh, mom and dad are just a little ride away, a little ride from northern Latvia, 3 hours through Estonia, and then a 3-hour ride through the Gulf of Finland on a ferry to get to Helsinki, where he was. Like, to leave on his own, and it just, everything I think you would look for in an NHL player, the maturity, the size, the skill. Like, to me, he seems like at 18 years old, the total package that you could plug and play into an NHL lineup. Am I off base in this, or does what I'm saying make sense?
No, they're all very, very close, right? So I think what you're really trying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the three of us at dinner would say the same thing, and that is that maybe Smits's floor, his entry-level floor, might be higher than the other guys. And what you're doing here is your proof of concept is clear. I think he plays in the NHL next year, Albert Smits. I really do. And everything you just said, those are all the reasons why. You know that he can manage things. He can manage a variety of scenarios. He's got the size, he's got the competitiveness, he's got the strength. The timing and all that'll evolve. It's very difficult for a young defenseman to come into the league. They have to evolve with the timing and everything that goes against defending against, the best forwards in the world. Having said that, I still think that the ceiling offensively with the people ahead of him is higher. And so that's how I determine my list personally. I think the elements have a higher ceiling offensively. I think that all things being equal, Smits out of the box might have the highest floor, but over time, that offensive projection with the other guys, that's what stands out for me. But listen, Albert Smits, all he's been doing is chasing his hockey dream, guys. All he wants to do is become a hockey player. He wants to be a hockey player. When he signs his pro deal and he goes and move in his first condo, wherever or house, whatever he does, where he's going to be playing in his first NHL season, you're not going to have to worry a lick about this guy. He's going to go home. He's going to manage his diet. He's going to, it's not one of these guys that, oh, how do I do laundry? How do I cook for myself? How do I, all that kind of stuff. And they are out there. They are out there, these young guys who've never had to do any of that. He's going to be fine. And that takes away a lot of stress from player development. And by the way, NHL coaches, because these teams drafting at the top of the draft, they're there for a reason, right? They're in sort of the muddy middle. They're transitioning their roster, et cetera. What does that do? It puts more stress on your coaching staff. They have to be working a little bit. They have to build up the trust of the group. They're trying to win. And what don't they have a lot of time or a lot of is time. So when Smits is there, they're not going to have to worry about his preparation as much as other rookies, and that matters.
One of the fun storylines of this draft is the Ruck twins. Whichever team does draft one of the twins, Books, I feel there's even more value in that team taking the other twin. From a media standpoint and the Rucks, perhaps, that's a great story. My question, though, is do you feel Liam and Marcus Rock will be able to succeed if playing for two different NHL teams?
Well, great question. I wish I had, that's so hard to answer, right? Because the answer should just naturally come out of my mouth that yes, because they're such elite prospects, and they're going to have to. They have to look at it through that lens. My best way to the there's two ways I want to answer the question. The first one is that from a team perspective, okay, been there, done that on the floor. How hard is it going to be to get both of these kids? Because yeah, it would be great. They have the synergy. You know what you're getting. You know they work well together. All those things. How hard is it to make it happen? Well, I'll tell you, you're going to have to invest another asset somewhere. Call it a draft pick to move up in the draft to try and get close to the two of them to make it happen. And that means that what you've done now is you've invested, three to make it two, if you understand what I mean. Three draft slots to get two draft slots. That's the first thing a team has to figure out. Look at our list. Are we going to be better off with these two kids if we make it happen? Or are we going to be better off with Liam Ruck, that is, and then this player and that player? What's best for our organization? So that's part of that process. As far as the kids go, they made it pretty clear to you guys and us at Sportsnet that they want to play together. I mean, duh. I mean, they're twins. They've only spent like 4 days apart in their entire life, which isn't maybe the most healthy thing when I really reflect upon that. But listen, Liam's the shooter. Liam scored over 80% of his goals from between the dots in the offensive zone. They both need weight. They both need strength. They're both going back to Medicine Hat next year. You know they're going to knock it out of the park next year offensively. They're going to get a year older. So if they've been drafted by two separate teams, the player development from both those NHL clubs, they're going to have a whole year with them at Medicine Hat. I believe they'll go to college for a year after that, so they'll have another year. And what do you have at the end of that tunnel? A better understanding from those two kids that, yeah, we're not going to be together. Like, my player development is different than your player development. They're 2 years older. They're more mature. Could it happen? Yeah. Would it be great to see it happen? You're darn right. Would it sell a lot of tickets down the road? Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's a lot of things here, right? But it's going to be hard.
Calgary's got four picks in the second round. If anybody's going to do it, I would have to think the Flames have the best or best positioned at least to make that happen. But I want to turn to the goalies. Jason, goalies are people too. We got to care about them. I don't think
They're
we're
the
going to see
best people. They're the best people.
I don't think we're going to see one go in the first round. But
No.
when do we see the first goalie go? And who is it going to be? Is it going to be Brady Knoling? Is it going to be the Russian kid Borachev? Is it going to be Tobias Trabel from Youngstown US League? Who's the first goalie and when does he go?
I think it's going to be Tobias Trabel from Youngstown. Personally, he's going off to college, as you guys know. This kid's a giant. He's a southpaw. Gives a shooter a different look. That might sound like nothing, but it is actually something. Depending on who the, I mean, when you get to the NHL, they're all elite shooters. But for me, at his size, these guys. Listen, they're all pretty big, right? Until we get down to my fourth goaltender out of the Ottawa 67s. But if you look at Tribal at 6'4" southpaw, I love his crease composure. His statistical analysis is fantastic. He's got ice in his veins, to be honest with you. Like, he never strays outside his posts, allows the play to come to him. And to a man, his teammates will tell you how much they trust him. Like, he's trustworthy. That's just the bottom line. They know that he prepares the same way. And they know what they're going to get every night, consistency, and that's obviously a healthy trait. 2.12 goals against, .916 save percentage, fellas. That's pretty darn good. The Russian kid Borachev. Now I have him number two on my list. 6'3", 200 pounds. Listen, Russia is a goalie factory. Whether like if people want to take a long hard look at this, it is like the Russians are developing more goalies than any other nation in the world right now. They have a very structured development system over there for their goaltenders. They pluck the best goalies out of different regions in their country, and they kind of sequester them in organizations that have KHL ceilings. So the Magnitogorsk, the Siskas, all this. They start them at the MHL level, and then they go to the VHL and the KHL, and they in between their development with their club teams, they bring them into goalie camps throughout the year. They'll bring the top 20 and they develop them on their own watch, and then they spit them out at the other end and they become elite NHL goalies, or on the international stage they sneak up on us and they're fantastic. This kid here, athletic. He's different than Tribal. He's a left catching goaltender. 225, 929 save percentage in the MHL this year. I like his athleticism. He's a little bit more active. A lot of the Russian goalies who come over, they're a little bit more active in the crease, athletic. He's a little bit more active than Tribal. So you're gonna have to dust him off a little bit and slow him down, but that's fine. Brady Knowling, he was number one for me. I'm splitting hairs on these guys, to be perfectly honest. And when one goes, you guys both know. As soon as one goes, the next two are going to just go right away because it's like it's a free-for-all after that. Nobody wants to lose their goalie. So Brady Knowling, I read here recently that he's going to go to Saginaw for next year for 1 year in the Ontario Hockey League before he heads off to Boston University the year after that. Brady's a giant, 6'5", 210. When he fronts the puck and he plays with proper poise, he doesn't have to be at the top of the blue paint to take up the net. He can be halfway, if you will, and he eats pucks when he's on time. There's some work to do there. He does have some rebound control. I'm not going to call them issues. I would just say the challenges. There's an opportunity to get better in that area. But there's tons to like. I like his mindset too, like his composure overall, like the way that he approaches the game. He's not hyper or anything like that. So, grade A prospect there. Those are the top three goalies that should go off the board first. And then the guy that'll go after that, in my estimation, and this is where it becomes interesting because, there's not a lot of goalies that are hovering around 6 feet tall in the National Hockey League. You have to be super athletic. Dustin Wolf in Calgary would be a glowing example of that. But Ryan Fedorov from the Ottawa 67s, he won the CHL Goaltender of the Year. He was awesome this year in Ottawa. 207, 923 save percentage, 5'11 and a half. And so, a team's going to have to understand what he is and what they're getting there. He's got one more year in major junior before he heads off to Penn State, and we'll see where that goes. But he'd be the next one, and he's a butterfly, not super super athletic, but butterfly athletic type of style goalie who needs to arrive on time and definitely can't afford to be outside his post ever because size becomes an issue then.
Yeah, maybe one of those goalies will become a future Florida Panther by the time the second round rolls around.
You
We
never
shall
know. That's
see.
right.
Yeah. So, Books, as we normally do at this point, curious if there's a player or players we haven't discussed, talked about, you feel could be a solid mid to late round dark horse in this draft.
Oh boy, there's a kid, guys, that came really burst onto the scene at the U18 Worlds at the end of the year. So I'm not gonna. It's not my place to discuss him, but for medical reasons, he had to stay. And there's nothing the matter with him. Like he doesn't have a disease or anything. He needed to stay at home for dietary reasons. Okay, this kid that I'm gonna talk about right now in Sweden, and then he came to the U18 Worlds in Slovakia, and you couldn't help but notice him. So Viggo Sorensen, who played in Boro in Sweden, and listen, this guy is shot out of a cannon. He can play up and down your lineup. He can play center. He can play the wing. At the junior level in Sweden this year, he had 38 points in 29 games, including 20 goals. But at the U18s at the end of the year, guys, four tucks, two assists, plus six, played with energy, put the puck in the back of the net. Relentless competitor. So this is in the middle of the draft. Call it the set. Well, he might go in the second. Let's say he goes in the third, just for argument's sake. Okay. When you get into that range, what do you need? You better meet my first three staples. What are they? You got to skate at NHL pace. You better think the game properly because it's happening fast. You got to read and react. And then the third thing, you got to be a relentless competitor. So skate, think, be a relentless competitor. Be a Carolina Hurricane style player, to be honest with you. And you know what else? What happens after that, pardon me, is your skill attributes rise to the occasion because you've ticked off those three boxes. Now your offense will rise, or your checking metrics will be on time, or you're going to tell the coach that I can kill penalties, I'm trustworthy, all these things. So that's Viggo Sorensen. Keep an eye on that name. I think he's got a bright upside to his future.
Good to know, Books. We can do this all day. We know you, how much you know about all these guys. But thank you so much for joining us in NHL Draft Class. We will watch your coverage on Sportsnet here and NHL Network moving forward. Thank you again for joining us on NHL Draft Class.
Amazing. Thank you for having me. And shout out to Phil behind the scenes as well. Thanks a lot.
Mike, that was great stuff as always from Mr. Bukola, one of our favorites. Guy knows his stuff. And the way he breaks everything down, it's so easy to understand where he's coming from, why he has the opinions that he has. Don't know if I necessarily agree with all of them, but it's fun listening to him explain it. And the debate was fantastic.
It was. It's always a lot of fun to talk to Books. Certainly does a fantastic job on Sportsnet. We saw him on the NHL Network with Sam Constantino on the NHL Draft Preview Show. And, you know, I liked, while I don't agree, we don't agree with who his top choice would be in this draft. You and I, you know, like the what McKenna has done, what he's shown. You know, we've seen how things play out over the past 3+ seasons, as far as McKenna goes, where once he gets comfortable, Adam, and what he needs to do to be successful, he does it. He faced, you know, he's faced the fire, he's faced some adversity, dealt with the criticism, and he pushed forward in that second half. And Books did mention that over the second half. So, me personally, I take McKenna first of all because I think, you know, number one has to be about the superstar upside, and McKenna showed a lot of that in the NCAA this season over the second half. But I wouldn't argue with anybody for siding with Stenberg because he may be the most complete forward in the class right now, and one of the most NHL ready players in the draft right now. But that's not to say that another player could turn out to be, you know, the creme de la creme of this draft in 3 to 5 years.
Well, I think one thing we can all agree on is that the Toronto Maple Leafs will make the pick. Now, what happens between number two and number 224 in the seventh round seems to me absolutely nobody knows what's going on. You know, we've seen picks flying around like a hurricane. As we sit here and record this on Monday, the Ottawa Senators and the St. Louis Blues have three first round picks each. Five other teams have two picks each. But let's talk about Ottawa. You know, they make the big trade yesterday. They move out Brady Tkachuk. They get number nine, number 27. I'm sorry, no, number 25 from
Right.
the Florida Panthers. And my guess is if you listen to Steve Staios, the Ottawa GM, I don't think those picks are long for the Senators either. They want to get established NHL players to make up what they lost. So we can have our mock draft, which is going to come out on Wednesday. A lot's going to change between now and when we get to the draft floor in Buffalo on Friday. It's getting a little crazy out there.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, and we discussed this off air, Adam. You know, Ottawa's made the playoffs the last 2 years, even if the exits were early. You know, they're not a bottom feeder anymore. They're a bubble contending team with just missing some pieces here and there, maybe an elite player or two. But you have a few options here if you're the Ottawa Senators. You know, they keep the picks and reset. You know, you're not replacing Brady Tkachuk with one player. You're building your next core. Then the other option would be, you know, they package these picks, move up in the draft to get a potential star. It's a bold move if you want another, you know, face of the franchise type player, but that's another option. And then maybe the third option is the aggressive play is, you know, you trade one or two of those picks. They can't trade number 32. So maybe you trade, you know, one, either nine or 25 or both those picks. You know, it's about replacing that presence in the room because obviously they no longer have that. Although, you know, you can look at what they have, you know, forward wise, they still got some great young talent. They got some great young defensemen in too. Jake Sanderson is still there and certainly still young and has proven himself in the league so far. So they just need to build around these pieces. I think the route that they might take, and I'd be surprised if they don't, to be honest with you, Adam, is trading one or two of those early picks, get a big asset in the fold, and a team that maybe might be rebuilding or are looking for those higher-end defensemen, as Jason Bukala discussed, or some of these forwards might be in the cards there.
I think the one thing I feel pretty certain of is the Ottawa Senators will not be making the number nine pick. I think that is absolutely in play. I think if you're a team that wants a center, because I think those big five defensemen honestly could be gone by number nine. If you're a team looking to add center depth, my goodness, number nine looks like a really good place to be. Because I don't know if Caleb Malhotra is going to be there, but Viggo Bjork could be there. Tynan Lawrence is going to be there. Maybe Alexander Command is a guy you want to reach for. He could be there. You know, that's to me would be where I think what I think is going to happen. A team that really wants a high-end center prospect is going to make that move to try to get up to number nine. I think the Senators are going to be willing to listen because they still have 25 and 32, plus, you know, what do they have? three picks in the third round, so they're not bereft of draft capital to do the things they want to do to continue to replenish their prospect group. But man, one of those, I don't envision them making three selections. My money would be on just the at two, maybe just the one, as they kind of look to reload quick. They've been to the playoffs two straight years. I don't think they want that to end. Listening to Steve Staios talk this morning, it doesn't sound like they feel like they're going to take a step back at all. They're going to look at what they have, Stützle, Shabbat, Sanderson, Ullmark, build around those guys and push forward.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with you. I know that, one of the things that really stands out about this class, and you've kind of touched on it a little bit there, Adam, there are some quality centers in this draft. And if you have an opportunity to get maybe a Viggo Bjork to add to the prospect pool, it seems to me like defensemen might be a strong position in this draft, particularly in the top 15. If a good number of those players turn into strong, reliable NHL defensemen, it could really boost how this draft is remembered. And I know it's one of your favorite mantras is to say, let's wait 3 to 5 years before we determine how good a particular draft is. And I tend to agree with you. But I mean, we could predict and project, and that's what we're here to do. So personally, I feel as though this looks to be a pretty good draft quality wise. So I'd look forward to what the Ottawa Senators do with these picks if they are going to, get an established player to further boost, their outlook for the coming seasons.
Yeah, to me, they're a team that feels like they're in win now mode. They're going to use those picks a little bit differently because whatever guy they get in the draft, look, there's no Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, plug and play elite superstar guy. We think McKenna, Stenberg are both going to be excellent players. We think the defensemen, look like they're going to be pretty close to top pair, top end number one defenseman. But none of them are going to be superstar caliber players, certainly not at 18, 19 years old. Ottawa's in a little bit of a different situation. They want to try to win now as best they can, utilize those picks in a different way. So St. Louis also has three picks. Calgary has two. Five, four other teams have two picks. It's going to be interesting, and I think we're going to see more trades. Hopefully not while we're transiting up to Buffalo on Wednesday afternoon. Hopefully they hold off a little bit. Let us at least get settled into town before they go crazy.
Yeah,
But
I hope so. I
nobody
hope so.
asks us. Nobody ever asks us what we're doing. Nobody ever thinks of the media when they do these things.
No.
We need to be considered.
That's been an eventful month, right, Adam? In addition to getting Jason Bukla today to discuss the 2026 NHL draft, we've had a lot of evergreen episodes of NHL draft class within the last month and a half. John Williams was on to discuss the Western Hockey League. We had JP Vornanen on all the international prospects that'll be available in this draft. JF Damfus of the Quebec Maritimes Junior Hockey League. David Gregory was on with us to discuss some general players, some insight. We discussed even the NHL Combine with him. Pat Cullen was on to discuss the United States Hockey League, a lot of high school players there. And Nick Smith was on to discuss the Ontario Hockey League. So plenty of podcasts to go back to listen to. Everything is evergreen and everything is up to date. So check them out.
And I highly recommend you go to NHL.com, NHL.com/draft. Check out especially Mike's story. He didn't tout it, but I'm going to plug it for him on Gavin McKenna, on his background, from growing up in Whitehorse to where he is at Penn State now. A fantastic deep dive into Gavin, his history, his family. You got to, if you watch the Gavin McKenna documentary on TNT, you'll kind of get a little bit of the relationship Gavin has with his grandfather, Joe Mason. Mike really helps flesh that out and how deep that bond goes. And one other thing I want to promote, Mike, you didn't know I was going to do this, so I'm just going to drop this on you. But Wednesday at 4 p.m., Mike and I are going to do an AMA on Reddit. Ask me anything, but it'll be ask us anything about the draft. So feel free to go to Reddit. Find however that, I'm not 100% sure how that works. I've never done one before, but you who know Reddit, Mike and I are going to do an AMA. You can come ask us questions directly. We'll be on there 4 p.m. on Wednesday. So if you have any direct questions you want to communicate directly to Mike and I, you can check that out, and we'll promote that on our social media feeds. But definitely NHL.com, NHL.com/draft. Check out our old episodes of the NHL Draftcast podcast. And now you can catch us on Reddit doing an AMA. But for now, NHL Draft Class is dismissed.